First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
So, I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
And welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome once again to the Ed Springson Show, brought to you by the MVM Radio Network, home of LouisvillePolitics.com and EdSpringson.com. While you're at those websites checking out all the latest, like the latest podcast of this show or anything else, make sure you join our email newsletter, and we will directly send to your inbox everything we've done each week. And join our RSS feed, and you can get these shows delivered to you right away, and save you the trouble of going through the internet. I tell you, there's always so much going on. Apparently, we had an election yesterday, and we'll get to that in just a few minutes. The call-in numbers, as always, 858-683-1326 or 502-805-0334. For you guys in the listening queue, as always, we appreciate you being there. Just make sure you hit the number one on your dial pad. And without further ado, our good friend, Mr. Dale the Truth. How are you, sir?
I'm doing good, my friend. We had a lot of good Patriots won last night, so it was a good election night.
Well, we're going to get into all of that in a few minutes. You know, we're going to spend probably the majority of the hour on that. I want to start with a couple of, well, you know we are. But I found, you know, we always start with a couple of local stories before we get into things that are going to take up the whole show. And, you know, here we had the election yesterday. You know, and last week we were talking a lot about how the city of Louisville and the Louisville officials just have no clue on how to deal with violence or black violence, you know, places like Beecher Terrace, et cetera. So while the election is going on yesterday afternoon, we have yet two more people killed, shot and killed, in the Beecher Terrace properties. And I tell you, you know, last week...
Election Day.
Yeah, well, you know, don't just stop on Election Day, you're right. And I think it was, you know, what the problem is here. Last week, the Louisville officials were touting this four-day event they were going to have, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday evenings. And all of it was poetry readings and art shows. Like the kids who were, you know, the poor kids and everybody else who don't have anything at all in their lives, no jobs, no income, no nothing, this poetry reading was going to save lives. And, of course, now we have two shootings at Beecher Terrace. You know, it just goes to show, once again, the idiocy of these clowns who run this government. And just for you gun-toters out there, we want to make sure, you know, that you realize, you know, for all you anti-gun people who say that the guns are the problem here, Well, there was a guy in the Parkland neighborhood who was rushed through the hospital. He's in serious condition, having surgery and everything else, a serious condition. And, oh, by the way, he was a victim of being stabbed at a home in the Parkland neighborhood. So, you know, don't think it's just guns here, folks. Violence is violence, but poetry readings and art shows aren't going to fix that problem. I had to point that out, Dale. I couldn't help myself. Another story out today, and this one should be fascinating. We talk about the infallacies of the Jefferson County Public Schools and the school board itself all the time on this show. Yeah, I know. All the time on this show. Well, Kentucky State Auditor Adam Elin has finally completed his year-long report that he was working, the annual audit, things like that, found 45 findings and, of course, a whole lot more recommendations that it basically says that JCPS has to reform, period. There's millions of dollars that are spent on administration that should be into the classrooms that aren't. Just a couple of highlights here. The board members, this is one of his findings, was the board members generally do not appear to have a depth of understanding to either examine or question the budget effectively without significant reliance on Jefferson County Public School staff. So what that means is these board members are making decisions on budgets without questioning anything in it because they don't know how to look at it. They don't know how to read it. So they just go to JCPS and say, hey, you know, what does this mean? Oh, that means we need it. Well, okay, we'll vote yes. And of course, ACPS is going to tell you they need everything. So the school board is a joke anyway. They can't even do their jobs effectively, and I think that proves it. How about you?
Well, two things I want to say about that school board. Number one, did you notice I just saw a little bit of one of the newscasts tonight, and did you notice the political hack that was on there saying that they thought Adam Elin was doing this because he wants to run for governor?
Oh, yeah.
That was the one and only Carol Haddad, who, yes, is up for re-election this year on the school board. So that's part one of 1A. 1A is there's something we can do about this, Dad. Three of those representatives on the school board, three of those students were just elected last year, but the other four of them are all up for election this year.
And I agree totally. But I can't understand how Carol Ann Haddad is still there. I mean, she doesn't have any kids in school.
I don't know if she's planning on croaking anytime soon or taking another political hack job, but the important part about those positions is all four of those, it happens to be the four ladies are up this year, and I use that term loosely, that those four ladies are on the school board are up this year, and it's a nonpartisan race in each of those school board races, and I believe you have until August to file. So people, if you're hearing the garbage that's coming out of their mouth, the diarrhea, the dialect that they put out there, time for you to file and run against some of these idiots.
Well, I totally agree with you, and I tell you an even better idea. Eliminate the Jefferson County School Board. We don't need a school board. There are a lot of communities throughout this nation that are our size or larger who run their school systems effectively and better than we do because of the absence of a school board. The mayor and the school superintendents are the ones who run the school system. It gives us a lot better accountability. It gets rid of the middleman for blame and misdirection. Let's take it out of their hands. Let the mayor and the school superintendent handle it. And if
so
they can't do their job.
The only problem we have with that is we always save a little bit of money on paying them because they don't really get paid too much. But do you really think that Mayor Fisher and the Democrat school superintendent are going to do a better job than this group?
No. But you know what? They won't have anybody to blame but themselves. It will give us better accountability. They have no accountability now. The school superintendent blames the school board, and the school board gets rid of the superintendent a bit too much. The mayor blames everybody, but now they'll have nobody
to
blame.
I agree with you, but it still falls back on the public who doesn't get out and vote these idiots out.
I understand that. I agree with you there. But that's one of the biggest things I'd love to see. A couple of other things here as well. You know, Adam Elin actually went out and found five comparable school districts that he used for comparison's sake, duh. All right. And it's really interesting because out of all of these places that he used for comparison, he started comparing salaries as well. The JCPS Central Department, their employers are paid a significantly higher average salary, and we have more employees earning over $100,000 a year here at JCPS than these comparison cities. And to give you some idea of what we're looking at, there are 150 central office employees in JCPS that make more than $100,000.
Yep.
When you get into the Charlotte-Mecklenburg area, that's the next highest in all these comparisons. They've got 53, only one-third of the amount that we do. Cobb County, 33. Austin, 39. I mean, when we look at this, you talk about having a bloated overhead. It's incredible.
Well, what it reminds me of, Ed, what it reminds me of is what my good friend Phil Moffitt, the soon-to-be new state representative Phil Moffitt, who kicked the neocons' ass last night, the soon-to-be state representative Phil Moffitt has said repeatedly that the Jefferson County Teachers Association runs the school district, and I think he's right.
Oh, I don't think there's any doubt about that. But when we look at this, you know, we've also got...
Most people won't admit that, that's what's happening. It's the emperor's, you know, new clothes. Nobody wants to
admit. Well, they're not going to.
That's the problem. Nope.
Why would the school board admit that? Why would, Jefferson County Public Schools admit
that? I'm talking about the parents, the school bus drivers, the volunteers, the kids don't know any better.
I get that, but the parents, in most cases, these parents don't know any better. Remember, these parents are uninvolved in school. They're either uninvolved in school or part of the rah-rah crowd that thinks everything is rosy. They don't know. They don't want to know the difference.
But
you either got blinders on or you're uninformed.
If they want to be involved, they can be because they're all working multiple jobs to pay for the screwed-up economy from the globalist banksters destroying the dollar, and their kids are going to school 20 miles away, so they can't be there after school for involvement.
Okay. I'll get that. I'll give you that. I have no problem with that analogy. That works for me. You know, we also had another part here that was very interesting because teachers are always griping that they have to pay so much out of their pocket, you know, for stuff that's needed in the classroom, paper, pencils, whatever. And according to the audit, over 93% of teachers said that they had to spend personal funds to supplement the resources for the classroom instruction, basically because they don't have financial resources within the school or the system allocated to the classroom. Now, we know that this is a problem all across the nation. However, it's interesting that when 96% said they were spending money on only classroom resources, we've got six warehouses that store all the school and office supplies, and they deliver all the school and office supplies to the Jefferson County teachers and administrators. So it's not that we don't have these resources. They all say that it's too slow and inefficient. They might order something at the beginning of the school year, and it doesn't get delivered until March. Why in the hell are we the logistics hub of the world? We've got UPS here, Worldwide Logistics. We've got a big FedEx presence. We are considered this logistical great place to be, and our illustrious Jefferson County School Board and Jefferson County Public School System can't figure out how to get daggone something from a warehouse at point A to the school at point B in a timely manner.
Now, I think that's a great question. I think that the teachers' union should get together with their thugs and, I mean, there are brothers in arms, the union thugs, the Teamsters, I keep saying thugs, it's interchangeable, can't help it. But the Teamsters and the teachers union, they should get together. They support all the same Democrats. They support all the same socialism and Marxism. So why can't they work together, like you just said, to use logistics to get that stuff taken care of?
Well, that's it. I mean, you know, we're supposed to be great at this stuff. We built our whole economy on this part-time workforce and temporary workforce for logistics, and our illustrious school board and our illustrious school resources can't figure out how in the hell to get something as simple as a light bulb or an ink pen to the right place on time. It's just mind-boggling to
me. But
they're really
kids. They don't know how to get a light bulb across town, but you're trusting them to enlist your kids with the knowledge. Well, it's not vocation. We talked about this show. They don't teach them anything vocational anymore, but they're still teaching your kids. They don't know how to get a damn light bulb from one end of town to the other, but they're responsible for turning out these cogs in this wheel that we call children.
Right. Hey, our good friend Puma in the chat room is saying we used to be a logistic hub a century ago. Now we just say that because UPS thunders through. Well, you're partially right on that. I won't argue with that logic. I think it's deeper than that, but I will agree with your point there. But yeah, you know, it's just fascinating to me that all of these things are stuff that's been done. We've known about forever. JCPS supposedly has their own internal audit team, but they don't audit anything because they don't know how. They're being taught by the same people who are screwing up our kids, I guess. I don't know. But I thought those were interesting things that we needed to point out. Time to get into politics. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Before we get to the races, I've got one here I think I just got up now that you're going to love. Your good friend Trey Grayson Charles Irwin
Grayson III to you.
Yeah, your good friend Trey Grayson is now back in Kentucky.
I told you he was going back. I don't think you believe me.
No. It wasn't a doubt about believing. I just wasn't sure what it was going to go to. But he's now been hired as the president of the Northern Kentucky Chamber of Commerce.
Right.
Great move, guys. Hire a lawyer who's never done a damn thing in his life, but told the first thing about running or starting or anything to do with a business, and put him in front in charge of your Chamber of Commerce. This obviously is nothing more than a political
Hire a Bill Clinton delegate when Slick Willie was running for president. I mean, he was very proud to be a Bill Clinton delegate to the convention, who then went on to become Secretary of State, who then got his ass kicked by a real man conservative, who then quit his job as Secretary of State, allowing Alison Blunderland to work up to her political career, and who then went to Massachusetts to raise money for Democrats, and who has now quit that job, too. Good hire there, guys.
Yeah, this is a guy who knows what it's going to take to run a Chamber of Commerce, because he obviously has this legitimate business experience running his own companies or working with small business or anything else. He's never been anything more than a political hack. He's always been set up part of the machine to run for office. That's exactly what they did here. They just installed him there, think that will give him some kind of leverage or something for a future run for office, and I think we know what that's going to be. But what a joke. But I knew you would get a kick out of that.
Oh, yeah. I didn't hear about the Chamber of Commerce thing. I guess it shouldn't surprise me, but look how much fun you're having with the Chamber of Commerce in Louisville, right, Ed?
No comment on that just yet. But yeah, we're having a blast with it. the Chamber of Commerce here in Louisville, we're going to have a lot to talk about probably next week, and I'll let you know more about that going forward. But Grayson goes on to say that this is a perfect job to come home to. The Northern Kentucky Chamber of Commerce has been the most important organization in the region, and it's an honor to lead an organization with a mission to strengthen business and improve our quality of life. Grayson, you've never been able to improve anybody's quality of life except your own. You wouldn't know the first thing about a mission to strengthen and organize business because you don't know the first thing about business. You've proven that in every job you've had. So it's just funny to me. I wanted to point that out because I knew you'd like. And let's go to the phones real quick. This is our good friend Ken Mulman. Let's see what he's got to say before we move forward. How are you, Ken?
Hey, I'm doing good, and I was calling in about what you're about to get into, really. I have something to say about Grayson as well because, being up here in Northern Kentucky, this isn't really a surprise to anybody. I think your analysis is correct that he's coming back to look about getting into the political scene again, and I honestly think he's politically dead. I think the running away was bad enough, as Dale mentioned.
Right.
And then going to that PAC.
He quit his job, Ken. He's like Sarah Palin. He quit his job. He's a quitter.
Right. And he it did give the seat back to Democrats. Now, that was to Elaine Walker, who then lost to Grimes. But it did create that scenario. I guess the point is that I don't think he can do it. Between leaving his job and then, I mean, that's one thing, right? That's what you'd hit him in the general with. But before you even get there in a Republican primary, so you left the state and you handed a seat to the Democrats to run a Democratic PAC?
Oh, you could write the commercials now. The commercials are so easy to write. It's unreal.
He would have to run a Democrat.
That's okay, Ken, because he kissed enough rhino ass that he'll get away with it. Remember, if you heard me talk about the other option. A couple of weeks ago, Ken, you may have heard me mention Cordell Lawrence, one of those guys who sat there and tried to hold me back in a room like I heard you talking about the other night. Cordell Lawrence of the Executive Committee, another lawyer hack who held me back in a room and had three or four police officers because I was such a threat to them. He also gives money to Greg Fisher and the governor's son, but that's okay because they're establishment ass kissers.
We're going to get all that going forward. Go ahead.
There is one other option for Grayson. That's to run as a Democrat. And honestly, I think that's his only option.
A lot of experience there.
Well, he was a Democrat before he was a Republican anyway.
National delegate. How many people can say that?
Right.
Well, that's what I'm getting. I agree.
To be fair, Northern Kentucky went through a shift in the 90s, and that was you hear the former Democrat, now Republican stuff. That doesn't really play up here at all anyway because everybody did that. Half of our legislators who have been there for more than 20 years started as Democrats.
I've got no problem now. let me point this out. I've got no problem changing your party affiliation if your values change and you just see a different way to go.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was a lifelong Democrat who switched to Republican just to hear a few years ago because I just couldn't stand what the Democratic Party had become. I'm not very pleased with what the Republican Party has become. However, I am a conservative. And conservatives identify with the Republican Party, whether we like it or not. So because I am conservative, they fit closer to what my belief system is, even though we have differences. So I don't hold that against Grayson. But Grayson, you know, has certainly a lot further along the line, you know, as far as influence and power and kissing the butt and getting the favors and everything else,
oh, yeah.
You know, than anybody. I mean, he was installed as a Democrat, went to Bill Clinton's thing, and then he decided to come back and be a Republican, so he buddied up with Mitch McConnell and bought himself some favor. Then he went to Massachusetts, to Harvard, and decided to go ahead and start himself in all the Democratic activities, including running a thing for Gabby Giffords out of Arizona, a Democrat, and now he wants to come back to Kentucky. Now, I'm wondering if he's going to come back and try to portray himself as a liberal or a conservative or just a nut job.
This is the uniparty that we all talk about, and Ken can appreciate this because Ken knows that they're all really one and the same, the which side of the shit sandwich you're going to eat, the one with the G on it and mustard or the one with the R in it and mayonnaise. And it's going to be a shit sandwich either way. And I think Trey Grayson must be trying to compete with Jack Conway, see which one of them can go the longest to get close to Edison Mitchell Jerome McConnell Jr.'s record of going their entire lives without a private sector job.
Who knows?
I really
we'll find
think-
out.
I'll tell you the one thing that'll hang Trey Grayson, figuratively now, of course, more than anything, is his association with Giffords, who understandably got a little anti-Second Amendment after being shot, but that really doesn't matter. He was associated, helped elect Democrats with a PAC, with, you know, the other person being someone who's now staunchly anti-Second Amendment in Kentucky. That's a non-starter.
Well, I've got to be honest with you.
Of course, Grayson runs for office in Kentucky.
I've got to be honest with you. You know, I want to push that actually thought in just a second, but I want to bring Paul real quick. Paul's been patiently waiting. How are you, sir?
Hey, guys. Hey, Ed, you know, you always manage to say something that just absolutely punches a button on my console. You said
that
Trey Grayson is not qualified to run a chamber of commerce, a business group.
Yep.
And you just said that, right? I have to respectfully disagree because we had another guy assume one of the world's largest economies with absolutely zero business background, and that guy's name is Barack Hussein Obama. So if Obama can run one of the world's largest economies, and albeit I would say into the ground, then, you know, Trey Grayson can handle the Northern Kentucky Chamber of Commerce.
You know, I knew you were going there. As soon as you opened that statement like that, I was like, I'm just going to Barack. You know, I tell you that you know, Barack Obama should be a great example of just why we need people with experience to lead business and to promote jobs and things like that. And Trey Grayson clearly is in that same mode. Barack Obama got a law degree that he doesn't use. He's never been nothing more than a street organizer. Basically, he's just pimping out the people for his own game. That's what I call street organizers. You know, that's just all they are. He was able to hype himself into the White House and enjoy the American way of life. You know, and don't get me wrong. He hasn't been alone. He's had a Congress who has done everything they could to aid and abet, you know, and on both sides of the aisle. So, you know, that's the thing about career politicians, and that's exactly the situation as well. Now, he may have all these.
And I got a question for our distinguished guest, and a question for Paul and Ken, if I will, and that is between the con man Jack Conway and Charles Merwin Grayson III, 143 years old, 144 years old, which one will be the first one that had to get a private sector job in their life?
Jack Conway. Go
I
ahead,
didn't know
Paul.
Either one of them had private sector jobs.
Well, you said which one will be first to have to get
either
a private
sector. Either one never has had a private sector job. That's my point. Their goal in life is to make it to where the turtle trader, that's going to be my nickname for them until November, the turtle trader, that's the retired senator. Their goal is to be like the turtle trader and get to his livelihood, his age, his ripe old age, and never have a private sector job. I guess lawyer counts as a private sector job, and I agree with Billy Shakespeare on a lawyer. So that's their goal. I mean, they got a long way to go, 143 and 144, and a turtle trader. How old is he now? He's 72.
There you go. Okay. I think right. I mean, that those are interesting contrasts. That's the thing, and that's where the American people, or the sheeple, I should say, and you know, and I'm talking to everybody that listens to this show and beyond. And I'm sorry, folks, if I hurt your feelings, but that's exactly what we get. It's exactly what we're entitled to. We continue electing clowns. We let Mitch McConnell stay in office for his whole life, never having to worry about the private sector. We've set Jeff Conway, we've set Trey Grayson up to be the next, you know, I don't know, welfare grabbers, if you will, because they're going to live on the state dime for the rest of their lives. There's no doubt in my mind about it. When you're somebody like Grayson who has absolutely nothing you can offer to anybody, and you're given a cushy job at Harvard, and then you're given another cushy job to come back here solely for the intent to run for another office, that should be a scary proposition to we the people. But we have become so complacent that we just don't care. And, you know, yesterday was a great example of that. Now, I'll be honest with you, I was way off on what I thought the actual turnout was going to be. It was projected at 15% by all the mainstream media, and I projected a vote turnout of 11%. You know, and we were both wrong. It actually turned out to be almost 20% overall and 26% right here in Louisville. But think about that. As I said last night, 70% plus of the people do not vote or get involved in the process. So that means
it's more than that. It's more than that, Ed. It's whatever the number is. That's the X percent of the ones who are registered to vote who didn't get involved. It doesn't count the ones whose registration have expired or who have never registered to vote.
Good point. But the point I'm trying to get at.
It also doesn't include people like me. It also doesn't include people like me who couldn't.
Well, that's exactly
what I want to talk to you about, Ken, because I'm hearing a lot of people out on the social networks who are independent friends of mine. You know, they're the ones that got me the red star when Deanna Brangers is sitting around in her moo-moo and stalking me. And the question is, what's going on with that? Because I'm hearing that, mentioning moo-moos, I'm hearing that some of these independents weren't even allowed to vote for the guys and gals in the black moo-moos. What gives?
Well, go ahead, Ed.
Well, I've got to tell you, because when I went into my polling place yesterday, when I went into my precinct to vote yesterday, you know, of course they wanted to ID me, and I gave them the ID. They said Democrat or Republican, and I said, well, I'm on a Republican thing, so I guess I got to vote there, but I don't really like either one of them. I told that to the poll worker while I was standing there waiting for her to look me up. She actually volunteered. She goes, well, you don't have to vote for either one. You can vote with this. And that was the ballot that the independents were getting for the nonpartisan races. So my poll worker, and I got to give them credit for that, my poll worker, of course, was willing to let me just vote not in the nonpartisan races and forget the Republican and Democratic thing. So, I mean, they volunteered
that
information.
That's supposed to be, but I'm hearing about independents.
Exactly.
And third-party folks who should still be allowed to vote on the back of the ballot who weren't allowed to do so, and that's literally a crime.
Actually,
well, I agree.
Technically, I could have voted in a judge race yesterday. I did not because there were three candidates. I don't know anything about
right.
Stand on a could potentially talk about, and it's ridiculous. How can you make an informed choice without information?
Well, that's exactly it.
And I took a slightly different tack than you did. I did go into my polling precinct yesterday and asked for the clerk of the precinct, because the clerk of the precinct, as I have experienced in the past, that kind of oversees the operations. And I identified myself by name and the fact that I was an NPP, no party preference, and I asked for a Democrat ballot, and I was denied the opportunity to vote and explain why, and he was okay, but I've established standing should I decide to do something beyond yesterday, okay? And I think that's what we have to get done. Ken and I have talked about this for a long time, Ken being a libertarian and me being an independent, about the need for election law reform in Kentucky to eliminate public-funded partisan primaries.
Yeah, hit the applause button.
Well, that's something I touched on towards the end of last night's show, and actually since Ken's here and Dale's here, I'd like to touch on it again since you bring it up, Paul, because we actually have a case like that going on in New Jersey right now that I think will end up at the Supreme Court. There's a gentleman who filed a lawsuit, a complaint challenging the constitutionality of the New Jersey primary election system, and the New Jersey primary election system is basically similar to ours. You're going to vote in a Republican primary, Democratic primary, or you're not going to vote. So independents and everybody else are left out. And it's interesting because the New Jersey Attorney General, John Hoffman, Yeah, who is representing the state on behalf of Secretary of State Kim Guadagno, put a motion in to dismiss the complaint. And I'm curious to see how this is going to turn down. And the reason that the motion was put in and their justification for dismissing the complaint was because Secretary of State Kim Guadagno was arguing that U.S. citizens in New Jersey do not have a right to vote in primary election, but political parties certainly have a right to use taxpayer dollars to fund them. That is their dismissal argument. So what they're saying is that citizens do not have the right to vote, but we as government officials have the right to use your money and figure out how we want to spend it for the political parties. That is mind-boggling to me. I am certainly
you're
under
talking
the impression.
Like you set the rules, Ed. My God. No.
Well, I think that this argument is exactly the same one that we use in Kentucky that Paul and Ken have run into, and I think it's an argument that's going to go further and hopefully end up in the Supreme Court in the very near future. But, you know, how can they sit here and say that? You as a U.S. citizen don't have a right to vote in a primary election, but the two parties have every right to spend your money to fund them. Isn't that representation without taxation? Or other
words? Can't get enough people to work the polls, Ed, and if they could, I don't want to sound like I'm giving the establishment ideals here, but they sit in these smoke-filled rooms and think of these ideals, so it won't be the first time it's been out there. But could you imagine if they had control over the polling places like they want to, instead of having to beg for poll workers and finally admitting that they would even let independents and libertarians, that was just so beneath them, they thought, to let these people work the polls. Could you imagine if they had their own jackboot thugs at the polls? Paul, you can weigh in on this and tell me what you think, but they'd probably start telling Republicans like me I wouldn't be allowed to vote in the primary anymore.
Well, Paul, Ken, either one of you, jump in.
I mean, well, from a legal standpoint, Paul, go for it.
The whole system is rigged, okay? I have actually, as a registered independent, I've actually worked at the polls, both on the Democrat side and the Republican side, okay? So it's not unprecedented, but the two parties are still the ones that get to choose. There's not a single non-Democrat or non-Republican on the Jefferson County Board of Elections, and I doubt that there are very many non-Democrats and non-Republicans on any of the other 119 Kentucky County Boards of Elections either. Now, you know, how can you possibly say and expect that elections are going to be conducted fairly when you don't have a proper cross-section of the electorate represented? There's almost 10% of Kentuckians who have chosen not to be either a Democrat or a Republican, and they're basically being shut out.
Now, Paul's exactly right, because if you look at the board of directors here in Louisville, and I can't speak for other counties, you have a board of directors with four members. Your county clerk, the unopposed county clerk, Republican Bobby Hosklaw, your county sheriff, the unopposed Democrat sheriff, John Aubrey, then you got the Democratic member, Carl Bensinger, and yes, your buddy and mine, Deanna Brangers. That's your board of directors.
Well, you know, that just goes to show. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I can tell you for sure, the way this works in the state of Kentucky is that the law states that the two largest parties get to fill the Board of Elections. And that's the way the law is written. And
remember,
we had a big
fear, a big stink back in whatever year it was, back when Flipper Patton was running, and when the Republican Party and all their drunken stupor allowed Pepe Martin to become the nominee, and our good friend, the late, great Gatewood, was also on the ballot. Remember how scared they were? They thought if Gatewood somehow got to X percentage of the vote, I know Ken will know the numbers on this and know what I'm talking about. Remember, they were so scared if Gatewood got such a percentage of the vote with the Reform Party that they wouldn't have control over all these state boards anymore.
Yeah, if Gatewood had gotten 10%, it's kind of a goofy way, at least now how it's written. I don't know if it was that way then. They've made a lot of changes and a lot of tweaks to election law here, especially
in the last
few
years. Changed.
So if they get 10% in a gubernatorial race, it makes you a full-blown party for the purposes only now, only for putting your candidate for president on the ballot, but it doesn't give the whole party ballot access. It's really a weird loophole that's backdoored in there. I think it used to be something different that they've changed, because it doesn't really make any sense the way it's written.
Well, it was changed. The change was intentional to make sure once they realized the loophole that they had allowed in it to give Gatewood that kind of power, or any other outside party for that matter, once they realized that, they started going back through and tweaking it to make sure that no one would be in a position to be able to get that kind of power again and challenge the two-party system. I mean, that's just the way it is.
Right there, why they're always going to work together. If people think that we're just conspiracy theorists going to help the Uniparty, no matter how bad the opposition is to a Democratic governor or to a Republican U.S. senator, they're going to work together, and Ken's probably going to be definitely agreeing with this. They're going to work together because if somebody else, by God, gets in their system, they're going to lose all those appointed positions.
Well, they are. That's exactly the whole point. I tell you something, we got to take a real quick break. Bottom of the hour break. We're a couple minutes late on. We're going to come right back and continue this conversation because I'm loving it. I want to get some of these races, though, Dale. We're trying. All right. You're listening to the Ed Sprinkles Show right here on the MVM Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Always call our numbers 858-683-1326 or 502-805-0334. If you want to get into the chat room, feel free to sign in through Blog Talk or sign in through Facebook or Twitter. And for you guys who are in the listening queue, do as our other two fellows are that are listening in now, and hit that number one on your dial pad if you want to get heard on air. I tell you, we spent the whole most of the first portion of this show just really talking about some of the asinine stuff that happens. I want to get into some of the races. I want you guys to stay with me because this is it was interesting to me. Some of the races that I was really following close last night, one was Jefferson County Attorney's race. County Attorney Michael Connell won. It was about a five-point swing. Karen Faulkner, his opponent, got 45%. He got 55%. Now, people say, well, how can you say that's a five-point swing because it's a 10-point win? Because if Karen Faulkner gets 5.1%, that's 5.1 that Mike don't get, and that's your swing verse. So, but it was interesting because Karen Faulkner is a first-time candidate. I mean, she is an attorney, but a first-time candidate running against, in a Democratic primary against the establishment Democratic candidate Michael Connell. She was outspent on a 5-1 margin and still got that close. I thought that was a great first race for her. Of course, O'Connell is now going to go through in his own arrogance and ego and everything else. He just downplayed the fact that 45% voting for Faulkner. He was asked a question if that meant that there are a lot of people that are unhappy with him. And he sits there and says, no, of course not. I don't think that's the case at all. It's been an affirmation for our office going forward, and I look forward to serving the members of our community. And I just laugh at that. The guy still don't get that almost half the people don't like him, but that's not why they voted that way.
They talked about how he was visibly brought to tears, so I figure that's because he knew that pretty soon his political career is going to be over, so he was upset about that.
With a comment like that, though, he's just going to reinforce because he's already threatened so many people inside, and we're going to start outing those threats in the very near future.
I'll tell you this, Dad. I'm getting pissed off at career politicians with Irish names. It's making me look bad. Making my people look bad, that's all.
Well, there you go, sir. But, in this particular case, he's been making so many threats to so many people, telling them they're going to be fired after the election and everything else because they decided to support somebody else for the election. He's been threatening all kinds of retribution. And once that starts, we're going to go ahead and start putting all that out right away and let the people of this county realize what's going on. And if Michael Connell follows through on half the threats that he said he's going to, then he may be facing some serious legal repercussions of his own. But it was an interesting race on that one. The winners from the other judicial elections, Angela Johnson won in the family court first division. Your thoughts, Dale?
She didn't win. She just gets to be one of the two candidates in November. I remember that.
Yep. Terry Haggerty.
She and Lauren Adams Ogden. My choice was Lauren Adams Ogden, who just barely snuck it out. So Angela Johnson and and Lauren Adams Ogden will be fighting it out, figuratively speaking, in November.
Well, that's a good thing, though, right?
Yeah, I mean, Lauren Adams Ogden has my support. I mean, she was the best of four candidates, and she's far better than Angela Johnson. I know you may not agree with me, though.
You know what? I'm not sure on that yet. I'm really, truly not. We get into family court, the 5th Division, Tara Haggerty. That was your winner there. And we move on and get to Christine Ward, of course, family court in the 6th Division. That was well expected.
Yeah, two women going in November in that one, too, Christine Ward and Stephanie Morgan White. And I really don't know what to think about that one. I guess at this early study, Christine Ward would have to get the nod since I gave her some consideration before going with Paul Mullen. So Christine Ward and Stephanie Morgan White will duke it out in November.
Yep. And then we get into the circuit judge for the family 7th Division. It looks like Denise Brown won that one, and it looks like it's going to be Brown versus Dennis Burke.
That's a horrible race.
Well, you know.
That's an ugly race right there. God, I wish we could have write-ins for the Black Moo Moos.
I wish we could, too, man. I tell you what, it's kind of funny. In a circuit judge family, 8th Division, you had Dee McDonald, of course, won big, 66%, 66.9. But second place is a guy, Mark Gaston. That's a guy we put out on the air a couple of weeks ago.
We love him. We like Gaston. So he's going to be battling it out against the Evil Empire in November against McDonald.
Well, the thing I like about that is, though, now Mark has plenty of time. Gaston now has plenty of time to put together a plan and actually campaign. You know, you really don't know what's going on in the judge race. Just Danny Kane came in at a distant third. But, you know, it is interesting, though, because Dee McDonald got 67% of the vote to a combined total of 32-33% for the other two combined. So Gaston's got some work ahead of him going to the and going into the race in November. But I think that this could be an interesting race now that you're down to two candidates. Getting to the district judge races, first division, you've got Annette winning handily. Yeah, well, you know. You've got Annette Karen winning handily, Nicole Compton coming in second. District judge for the second division, you have Amber Wolf, won with a second.
I thought Josh Snyder was right behind her. All they really did was eliminate Derwin Webb, which is a good thing.
Oh, I agree with you. You know, that's what I was going to ask, because everybody thought Derwin Webb, you know, his name is so familiar and all the other things, that Derwin Webb would be a contender in this race, and he came into last place. So I was actually like you. I'm glad to see that, too, because I don't see Derwin Webb being capable of being a judge, because quite frankly, I haven't seen anything that I'm impressed with by him.
And that good guy won in District 12. I know you're getting ready to get to District 12, so that's a good one, too.
That's exactly where I'm going. James Michael Green won. Eric Hayner, second place. And the interesting thing here is there was only about close to a 5,000-vote difference between the two of them, and there's a long time till November. So this could be an interesting shakeup as well. We're going to see how that one works going forward.
Yeah.
Ken, Paul, comments?
I mean, I'm waiting for the state house race down there. And on top of that, the other races up here, the instigators of the Red Stars,
we're going to get into house races in just a second. I want to mention a couple of the Metro Council races. One in particular.
Don't do that. Don't do that. You're going to punch your button.
Uh-oh.
Got to. That's the way the show is, man. We might end up going into a little bit over, because I want to get some more races. Well, we spent a lot of time on the first half of the plan.
That's all right. Do it.
You know, but in District 1 Metro Council, we
had... you did it.
I know. I know I did. We had a progressive communist, in my opinion, Attica Scott, facing off against Jessica Green, who I think is a racist. Jessica Green has made race comments to me publicly, privately, you know, and most of that, you know, could have been because I'm the one who had her mom, Judy Green, impeached. So she wanted to make it personal by treating me like I'm kind of a racist, and that's fine. You know, but it was an interesting paradox.
But
and
Attica Scott wasn't sending you any love letters either.
Yeah, well, you know. Attica Scott, it was interesting. I'm not a friend or a fan of Kevin Cosby, as anybody who follows the show knows. However, at one point, Kevin Cosby had thousands of dollars of scholarships he was willing to put forward to residents in Attica Scott's district. And it was real interesting. Not only did Attica Scott fight against jobs in her district by fighting against Walmart, where there are no jobs, she didn't want any. Whether you like Walmart or not, those are jobs that are needed in that area. And the second thing was that Kevin Cosby, as much as I can't stand the guy, as crooked as I think he is, as much of a false preacher as I know he is, you know, he was still at one point willing to offer scholarship money to some people in her district, and she couldn't find more than 30 minutes to spend with him. You know,
I told you the fact that she was so anti-Walmart, it's ridiculous because it's a microcosm of when people don't like these jobs that only pay $10, $11, $12 an hour. And usually it's the union people, because they know then they can push for higher wages. They go, oh, you can't work on that. Well, you know what, 100% of $10 an hour is a lot better than the 100% of nothing that they're getting without those jobs. And she didn't have any better answers. Scott didn't have any good answers. And I think that a lot of the mean Judy Greene constituency must have been still pissed off at what happened to Judy Greene and got out and voted for her daughter. Maybe they'll bring the Cadillac back out of retirement.
Well, you know, the thing was, though, you know, I don't believe in holding the sins of the mother or the sins of the parent against the child. So in this particular case, I really took myself, personal feelings out of the mix with Jessica Greene and Attica Scott, and I looked at what I thought was best. And I actually think that Jessica Greene was a better choice, and I told people that on the air a couple of times. So, Jessica, as much as you hate me, you're welcome, because some of my people voted for you, and that's just the way it is.
Well, I endorsed her.
I did.
Let's be honest, if her name was Jessica Smith, would she have won?
Good question. And then, of course, we get down to District 9 Metro Council.
That was a
you know, yeah, you had 13 candidates. We knew nobody was going to get more than 20% at that. And Bill Hollander, who was endorsed by Greg Fisher in the middle of a primary, which is completely against the Democratic Party rules. You know, Greg Fisher wasn't chastised by the party, as you were. You know, he didn't pay any daggone price for actually getting involved in a primary and making endorsements. But his buddy Bill Hollander, the former lead counsel or managing partner of whatever, Wyatt, Tarrant, and Combs, you know, and I hate to tell you this, folks, that's an insider legal group that gets money from the city of Louisville. So, you know, this is just one hand washing the other. However, I've got to ask this question. Was that still a better choice than J.P. Davis?
Well, there were 13 candidates in the race, like you said. Somebody could have literally, statistically, won that race with like 9%, but yet Hollinger had 27.5%. So people apparently were paying attention to Fisher's endorsement and going by it, because, hell, there are a lot of endorsements thrown out in that race. Molly Younger No had the feminist endorsement. J.P. Davis had the gay group endorsement. Stephen Imhoff had the school board endorsement. Mike Brooks had the newspaper endorsement. They were all over the place.
Oh, yeah, they were. And you know, that aided Bill Hollinger.
Because the two guys I thought would have done the best job, I mean, that district just loves its socialism, apparently, because the two guys I thought would do the best job, because only I, the political junkie, would have studied a district that, hell, I have no interest in unless I'm hanging out at the bourbon bars down there on Saturday night or something. But there's two guys that were in that race who weren't for bringing back emissions tests, who weren't for increasing the minimum wage, and who weren't for more sales taxes. And I looked it up. Those were Benjamin Vaughn and Jonathan Musselwhite, and neither of them could get over 3.5%. So I said, I give up.
Well, you know, and that's the thing, too, because you also got to look at Hollander and J.P. Davis. Both had over $40,000 apiece to spend on this race.
District. That's all there is to it.
Oh, sure. And they spent, they literally bought the election between the two of them. You know, and you know, on top of that, you know, they were really, really, truly, there's a lot of horror stories coming out about how much bullying went on behind the scenes to the other candidates, and actually Puma in the chat room just mentioned it too. So, you know, I mean, there was a lot of bullying going on nobody was aware of in the public eye. These guys had plenty of money from the establishment, but I did think it was interesting because I thought Davis would actually be closer than he ended up against Hollander. You know, so that was the interesting part for me. Now, moving on to the other races real quick, we also have not only District 9, but let's look at District 7. And by the way, I want to make sure I give a shout-out to Republican Laura Rice, because she'll be the one facing Bill Hollander in District 9. And believe me, well, you know it is. But I tell you, District 9 has always been a very liberal district, but Laura Rice is a class act, so who knows how that's going to work out.
The only thing that would help Laura Rice, and I'm telling you the God honest truth, Ed, and if you and Paul, and well, I know Ken may not be aware of this district, but if you and Paul think about this, and Ken would be right there in spirit with us, the only thing that would help Laura Rice is if they didn't have that damn Democrat straight party ticket when it comes to November for that election.
I totally agree.
Bingo.
I totally agree.
Bingo. 100% right.
I totally agree with that. Moving on, District 7, I apologize. Angela Leet, actually, there was a Republican primary in District 7. Angela Leet.
They didn't campaign. Neither of them campaigned, but I was holding out hope for Sean Sloan because I thought he was the damnedest thing, and I'm not privy to what goes on inside the establishment mm-hmm. party over there in Newburgh. Yes, folks, the Republican Party Executive Committee meets in Newburgh. How about that irony? But I will tell you this. Sean Sloan is on the Executive Committee, but yet several members of the Executive Committee gave money to Angela Lee, including our good friend, yep, McCarthy, gave $1,000 to Angela Lee. So that was the reason alone for me. I hope Sloan could do something, but he didn't have a chance, apparently.
Well, he didn't. I mean, he was easily defeated. Of course, Kim Fleming is giving up that seat at the end of his term. And then Angela Lee is going to face off against Democrat Bruce Maples in November. And I can tell you guys this, please seriously consider Angela Lee. That's all I'll say this time. And, of course, all the other Metro County districts went pretty much as we expected. Mary Woolridge, the incumbent, District 3, still there. Sherry Bryan Hamilton, the incumbent, District 5. Mary Ann Butler, 15. Dan Johnson, 21. They easily won their primaries. The only interesting story here is Mary Woolridge, District 3. She beat the hell out of former Constable Dave Whitlock, the joke of a candidate. But he actually got votes. That really surprised me. But she won like 80%, something like that. Yeah, it was kind of crazy.
Who were the votes in the West End? Who were the 17% in God help from the West End voting for David Whitlock?
Yeah, I know. that's the people he bought, man. I don't know. Those are the criminal elements that he hangs with. He's a piece of scum. He's always been a piece of scum. Always will be a piece of scum. If he's not in a diversion program, he's working on his next
David
one.
David Whitlock pays ladies tonight, I guess. That's where he got those votes.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And as far as I know, the case against him for, shooting an unarmed woman, Tammy Ortiz, in her vehicle leaving a Walmart, that one is still ongoing. So, this guy has always been scum and should have never been considered to even be in an elected position. And somehow, since he can't be a cop and carry a gun anymore, a constable and carry a gun anymore, they forgot to close the door on all elections. So
it
he put
is.
His name
just the Frankfurt end. Move it to the Frankfurt one, the fun, sexy one.
Tell you, we're heading to a couple of good ones right now, and I tell you, I want to get in. I'm going to kind of, well, let's go ahead and hit a couple of Frankfurt ones. Why not? All right, Dale, you're chomping at the bit. Let's jump into it. 30 seconds. Phil Moffitt, Shelley May. For me personally, I thought this was a pretty damn good race. Shelley May is the establishment candidate, and I know you can't stand her. Phil Moffitt.
Well, and I would just like to start out. I would like to yield a minute of my time to the gentleman from Pendleton County.
Well, let's get to that in a second because I've still got the time.
Well,
I'm
going to get his word in on because he's
right. We're going to let you guys. We're going to let both of you guys get your word in. But here's the thing for me. I found this was one of the races I've been talking about for a couple of weeks now that I thought was going to be interesting to see because Phil Moffitt is the Tea Party candidate. Shelley May is the establishment candidate. So I thought this was probably going to be one of the better races to watch and pay attention to in the primary. Because you had establishment versus anti-establishment. And I thought it was a pretty good race. I thought it was a close race. I know you think it was a blowout. It wasn't a blowout. Phil Moffitt got 53%. Shelley May got 47%. That's not a blowout. That's a three-point swing. I thought it was a good race. And to be honest with you, as I told everybody the other night, whichever one of these two won this primary, I was going to be happy either way because, for me, we had two good choices, whether you like the establishment or not. And I know you don't like Shelley May, so do what you want to with your time, sir. It's yours. Go.
Well, like I said, I wanted to yield some time to Ken since we've been bogarting the time, but hell, it is our Wednesday night show. Ken, would you like to get in a word about the constitutionalist Phil Moffitt winning over the one who didn't want us voting in the Republican Party anyway?
I have one word that describes it. Vindication.
Amen, brother.
Vindication. These guys, and I'm actually friends, personal friends, with some of the folks that pulled this Red Star stuff up here in northern Kentucky.
Yep.
And I told them, to their face, you are making a terrible, terrible mistake. Do not do this. You are making a terrible mistake. And they just yelled and screamed and cussed and stormed away.
Of course.
And, every single one of them, every single one up here in northern Kentucky in Cook County is where they really did the Red Star thing. Each and every candidate that was involved in that race, whether they were an incumbent or a challenger, been removed from office through the primary. They are all gone.
Well, the only thing I'm upset because we got some other – I know we got some other good Frankfurt races to look at, and I'm right there with you. I told them 2 years ago in the middle of all that fiasco, Ken. I thought it was good timing on Ed's part that we brought Ken on to do a show the very next week. That just worked out. That just worked out really well, ironically. But all I'm going to say about this is – You know, when you come out there and you tell us that we're not loyal Republicans, and you come out there and you tell us that you don't want us in the party and you don't want our votes, well, guess what, Toots? You didn't have to worry about it. You didn't get the votes. I'm hoping and praying that one day Shelley May will run for soil and water conservation and get her ass outvoted by David Whitlock, Judy Greene's daughter, and Furl Barnsley, and that's what I got to say about that.
Well, you know, I'm totally against that mindset, but that's just me.
Why do you think anybody would want to vote for Shelley? Ed, just please tell me. What has the establishment done for the people of the 32nd District? I used to live in that district. What has she done for them?
Well, I mean, you know, my experience with Shelley hasn't been through a district level. My experience with Shelley has been through the GOP, the JCGOP, and I've worked with Shelley on some other situations that aren't even political. And all
if you were in that district, she wouldn't take a stance on anything. She wouldn't be interviewed on anything, and she wouldn't debate on anything. Why the hell would you vote for an idiot who won't debate anything, take a stance on anything, or show up for anything? She showed she had no balls.
But 47% voted for it, Dale.
I don't know why. I mean, you're right about that. I remember hearing you talk about it. Martin said he thought it would be 10 points. You said 5 points either way, which I know you were kind of covering your bet a lot of ways that way. You were closer.
I thought it would be five points.
She refused to take a stand. She refused to take a platform on anything, and she refused to debate. Why would we forget their name, Shelley May? Say her name is John Doe. Why would you vote for John Doe if he never tells you what he believes in and he refuses to debate his opponents? Paul, Ken?
No, I agree, actually. I do think that was a huge mistake on her part, just pure political. I don't have any personal links with May. I don't know this woman from Adam.
There's
a Tea Party guy up in Boone County who did the exact same thing, right? It's a reverse situation where the Tea Party guy thought he was ahead, refused to debate, and he got destroyed because you can't run away from the public. The public is who is electing you. They're hiring you for the job. If you refuse to be seen in public, they're not going to hire you.
I'm not arguing with you. I mean, I think that you have to pay the price sometimes, and I think that probably has something to do with Shelley losing.
That man wore out so much shoe leather going door to door, and he's going to be a star in Frankfort. I will tell you that now.
Well, it's like I said, I have a lot of great respect for Phil. I support him in charter schools. I've met with Phil several times. I consider Phil a friend just as much as I consider Shelley a friend. So for me, this was not a partial race, and I'm trying to look at it as objectively as I can because I had two friends involved. And like I said, for me, if either one of them would have won, I thought it was going to be good no matter what. So, you know, but it is interesting. Shelley did make a couple of mistakes. The disengaging a little bit probably did hurt. But I'm telling you, you know, I think the more interesting ploy to me was the establishment versus the anti-establishment. And that was a look for me I wanted to see. And it was a little bit it was about as close as I expected, somewhere around 5 points. It ended up being seven. The 38th Senate, we were kind of curious how this was going to play out since Dan Syme, the incumbent, you know, a lot of his district now is in Bullock County, you know, so he eliminated a Jefferson County challenge. As we all know, Marty Meyer challenged him in the last 38th Senate race, the Democrat Marty Meyer, which nobody can stand. I certainly can't. But he scared Dan Syme. So when we went through the redistricting, Dan Syme's district moved more away from Jefferson County and primarily in Bullock County. So I was kind of curious how that would play out. And he had one opponent, Brenda Sue Board, and Dan Syme won that one easily, 80% to 20%. So
I told you before the election, Ed, I never heard of her, and I vote in that race. Nobody remotely related to her campaign ever put out a sign, made a phone call. Again, why do you get on the ballot? I mean, we understand some people like to see their name there, and they get distracted by shiny objects like David Whitlock and Bureau from the Farm, whatever his name is. But why do you put your name on the ballot if you're not going to campaign? I never heard anything about the lady, and somehow she got 25.8%. I guess maybe that's the anti-Dan.
Oh, I got the answer.
Go ahead.
I got the answer for Dale. The reason they do that, Kentucky law, and this is our friend Ray Pierce put his name on the Democrat ballot against John Yarmuth. And Kentucky law has got a really interesting little hitch to it. Should, in a two-way race, should one of the two people die before the election day, the other one is automatically declared the party's nominee. So maybe Brenda Sue Board was hoping that there might be a death in the Republican family and she would become the nominee. What do you think?
I got nothing,
well, we know,
man.
We know, Ray,
the
well, we know Ray was... Yeah, Ray was certainly hoping for that with the Army. That was his best shot. Yeah, let's move on.
Ray,
well, Evan was hoping for the same thing.
There ain't no doubt about
but
that.
But the good news is when you look at the state Senate, we had another fun state Senate race. And, yes, I endorsed in this one. And I was so glad to be on the opposite side of one Damon Thayer, another Mitch McConnell cookie cutter. And Damon Thayer went on CN2 Pure Politics, and he said that Sarah Beth Gregory had this one in the bag. Suck it, Damon Thayer. The non-incumbent George Maxwell Wise, who has never run for political office, beat the establishment's darling sheep by 9%.
Oh, there you go. I can't follow
that. He sat there on TV and he told Ryan Alessi that they had nothing to worry about, that Sarah Beth Gregory had this. There was no problem.
Right.
Yep.
No, I totally get that.
The only poll that matters is the poll on election day. That's the only poll that ever matters. And that, you know, that was the theme coming out of lots of campaigns. And, you know, it's what it
right.
is. And one more thing, because I know we're running out of time. I just realized in that conversation that what rhymes with Allison Lundgren Grimes is Senator Dan Sein. I just realized this. It just came to me. So I just had to throw that in real quick. I'm done.
Maybe that's the anti-Sein vote. I don't know. But the good news is if they get to Frankfort, not only will my friend Phil Moffitt be there, but he's going to have some help from the 10th District, where another friend of mine, another constitutional liberty guy, Alan Claypool, who put on his campaign literature, liberty candidate, not neocon, not Republican, but liberty candidate, and he smacked two more establishment Republicans. Alan Claypool won the 10th District race down there in Hopkins County area, and Alan Claypool will most likely be going to November, and he will also be a good State House member, and he was also opposed by the establishment.
Okay, fair enough. But I want to move to one race real quick. We are in overdrive. We're going to stick around just a couple more minutes because we have to talk about the one race we haven't got to all night. That's for U.S. Senate. You know, let's start with the Democrat side first because Dale's going to ramble on the other side, and we're going to get there.
I'm not going to ramble. The globalist banksters got their seat. They held on to it. I got nothing to say about it. It happened the way it happened.
Let's look at reality. Okay, well, I mean, let's look at here, though. I mean, you know, Mitch McConnell wins with 66% of the vote. Matt Bevin has 30.5%, and, of course, the rest don't matter. You know, this was supposed to be the Tea Party versus the establishment as well on the national stage, and all eyes were supposed to be on this race, and it just seemed like Matt Bevin never got off the ground. Now, I've been critical of Matt throughout, as you know, and you've been critical of Mitch throughout, as everybody knows. You know, but, you know, in this particular case, does this say that the Tea Party is not as strong as it once was here in Kentucky, or does this just say that Matt Bevin was a bad candidate? Because in my opinion, he was. Go ahead.
I don't think it says either one. Go ahead, Ken. I'll jump back in.
Matt Bevin ran a terrible campaign, period. It had nothing to do with it. Matt Bevin had a great resume.
Yeah.
I think he had a real opportunity. And every time he'd get momentum, he'd trip over his own toes and fall on his face. And then miraculously, somehow, he'd get back up and start going again, and it didn't happen again. And I can't even remember what the first one was anymore because the cockfighting thing took precedent over everything. He was on the trajectory. I mean, you can watch the polls. He's growing, cockfighting. Oh, we're flat. We're done. I mean, that was the end of the campaign.
I don't disagree. The thing I want to ask Ed about, because I heard a little bit of his and Martin's show from the other night, I want to make sure I get this clarified since I wasn't on the show that night. Ed, I heard you say on the radio, and I just about screamed at my MP3 player when I heard this. you said that the Tea Party support was split. Please tell me what you meant by that.
Well, I explained that during the show. It seems to me that when it came to this race, the Tea Party was split, and I'll tell you why.
Wow.
Because
who supported Mitch McConnell and the Tea Party? Please tell me now for everybody here.
Dale, if you'll let me finish, I'm trying to get there. Matt Bevin had the Matt Bevin had the Louisville Tea Party support. I even gave you a live call in from a Louisville Tea Party meeting last month during your show. But what happened was what I found later was Tea Party Nation. Okay, it's a national Tea Party movement. Everybody knows who Tea Party Nation is. Tea Party Nation actually had pulled their early endorsement of Mitch McConnell last year after Mitch McConnell and the whole government shutdown thing went down, and they decided to pull an endorsement from McConnell that they'd given him well in advance. But Matt Bevin started stumbling so much that the Tea Party Nation went public and said that Matt Bevin was a terrible candidate. He was more liberal than he was conservative, and they re-endorsed Mitch McConnell and gave Mitch McConnell the endorsement. So to me, what that said was that there was some sort of a split with the Tea Party. Did that mean the Louisville Tea Party? No. But there is a split because the Tea Party didn't seem to be on the same page from the national standpoint and the local standpoint. And I explained that during that show.
Now,
that was what I meant by that.
Now, well, the problem I have with that is the Tea Party Nation, what you conveniently didn't mention was several people resigned from Tea Party Nation after that because they didn't agree what a very few people had strong-held them into endorsing McConnell. And also, that's one group, Tea Party Patriot Citizens Fund, Liberty Caucus, Freedom's Work, Louisville Tea Party, Kentucky Tea Party, United Tea Party, Tea Party Patriots Fund, they all endorsed Bevin. That doesn't sound like a split to me.
Well,
Real quick, you know, one Tea Party group, you're going to have that, especially with the Tea Parties. I wouldn't say there was a huge split. Now, what is interesting, though, is that on an individual basis, and I know this because I did some polling up here in northern Kentucky this time around for some folks. I'll tell you what, it was the weirdest thing I've ever seen. Across all demographics, across all ages, sexes, everything, Bevin and McConnell polled exactly the same within a point and a half across all demographics. I was like, that is the weirdest thing I've ever seen. I've never seen it. Usually there's somebody like the old folks like this guy or the young folks like this guy or women like this guy or men like this guy. No, it was exactly identical across all demographics. And I did the poll, so I know it's legit.
Well, the thing for me is, I mean, when you get into the publicity and stuff and things like that, and that was what I was trying to contrast. All right, when you get into publicity stuff, Tea Party Nation is well-known. They are well-funded. The behind-the-scenes people quitting everything else or being strong-armed into Mitch McConnell, stuff like that, okay, that goes on everywhere. But for me, they're well-known, they're well-funded, and this endorsement and this change in endorsement came right before the primary election. So it created – now, this is a liberal media, I understand that, but it did create the appearance of a division right before the primary election. And I think that to some degree – that shows some sort of a problem within some of the Tea Party. You know, we have to find a way for the Tea Party to get back on the same page at every level. They were with Rand Paul, and they were with other candidates. But when you have the national – when you have the Tea Party Nation going out there and getting all this publicity, going against other Tea Party groups like the Louisville Tea Party, especially in this race because it is basically a Louisville and Kentucky race, you know, that created some sort of a problem. Now, when you get to Matt Bevin, though, I agree with Ken and Paul. It was one of the worst campaigns I've ever seen run. And I said from the very beginning, the very first image that anybody saw out of Matt Bevin was him in some khaki pants with a button-down white Oxford shirt and a polo sweater tied neatly in front. It made him look like the East Coast yuppie from Connecticut that Mitch McConnell was trying to portray him to be. And that image started it. And every time, I think Ken's right, every time Matt seemed to have some sort of way of bouncing back, he found another hole to dig and put himself in. And that was
I agree with what Ken said about the resume.
What we're getting at, though, that was always the problem, and I mentioned that time and time and time again, that this was a bad campaign. The people who are running his campaign, all right, he's getting his media from people outside of Kentucky doing all his media work. The people who are involved in his campaign are from outside of Kentucky, don't know anything about the voters here or voting tendencies. You know, they don't know anything about the communities Matt wanted to serve, and it was clearly obvious from the way that they advised him and had him run this campaign. That was always the problem, Matt Bevin, as a candidate to me, was how poorly contrived, how poorly implemented, and how poorly received this whole campaign had been. Matt Bevin, the person, as I've mentioned several times.
The problem with what you just explained about people outside the state running this campaign, people who aren't from Kentucky, congratulations, you just described every U.S. Senate race. That's nothing unique.
No, not necessarily.
And if the East Coast establishment, what the hell is Addison Mitchell Jerome McConnell Jr.?
But you know what? Addison Mitchell, he is the incumbent. He is the familiarity. That was the whole problem. We all knew Mitch was going to go to the gutter. We all know that Mitch isn't somebody that everybody loves. I hate as much about Mitch as most people do, and things about Mitch that I do like. We've had that discussion many times on air. I'm just talking about Matt Bevin, the person with a great resume and everything else, who run this kind of campaign, was the biggest problem. And that's what killed He could not run a campaign. Matt Devin should have been using his 9 children and his wife in backdrop at the very beginning of this campaign, promoting himself as the good husband, family man, and father and provider that he really is. That's what should have happened.
What did you want his wife and children to say? Because I was on the show.
What did they say within the last 2 weeks?
When his children said that McConnell was a liar, you got angry because his children said that. So what did you want his children to say?
No. I'm talking about
you
the commercials.
You said that you didn't like the fact. You can roll the tape back. You
said
you didn't like the fact.
I didn't like the fact that he allowed his lawyer to call Mitch McConnell a liar. I'm not disputing that. But there was no reason. At the very beginning of this, if I had been running his campaign, at the very beginning of this, I would have certainly used a better image than the tied over sweater in front of him. I would have had my 9 children and my wife there. I would have let the kids say that Daddy is a great guy and a great father, not call Mitch McConnell a liar. There's a big difference in the terminology. That would have been well received. But for a lot of people that I polled here in Louisville, the fact that this late in the campaign he puts his family out there and allows his child to say that Mitch McConnell is a liar, it took away from the family image and the guy that Matt Bevin truly is. I think Matt Bevin is a damn good guy. We've talked about that. I thought that he was a lousy candidate, and the fact that he was ignoring the people that could get him votes with his advertising dollars, and we talked about that. You even spoke to his people about getting advertising to get to 150,000 people right here on the show, the real conservative people, 5% of which will go vote, that would have been looking for voting for him had they heard his message. Everything about this from beginning to end was run wrong, and that was a disservice to this entire race.
My question now that we know that the traitor turtle, the turtle traitor, I can't decide which one I like better. Now that the turtle traitor is going to face Allison Blunderland in November, mm-hmm. Do you really think Mitch McConnell is going to come and give you ad dollars, Ed?
I'm not worried about the ad dollars. I was talking about getting to the voters that he needed to get to the polls.
That's my point. The people who listen to the show are the ones who vote. These people who voted for McConnell, yep. They voted for McConnell because they've seen his name for 30 years, and there's a lot of blue hairs who get out there and still vote. They have to get help out there. They have to get their walker out and their cane and their Depends and all that. But they still get out there and vote because they know the name McConnell. And that's the only reason they vote for him.
The ad dollars and the spending of your ad dollars, you know, is really secondary, because the biggest thing that Matt needed to do was reach out to this audience. If he didn't want to spend ad dollars, we extended several invitations to him to put him on air to talk to our audience.
I agree.
And he would never respond. That was the thing.
Well, let me ask you this. If you're one of the neocons who's running McConnell's campaign, what would you think about the percentage of the vote that he got, McConnell?
What would I think about the percentage of vote that McConnell got?
If you were on his campaign, what would you think about that?
What would I think about the results from last night? I would think they're great.
Then what have I told you, because I looked this up today and confirmed it, that as a sitting Kentucky senator, it was the lowest percentage that a sitting U.S. senator has gotten a primary since 1932.
That's the first time since 1932 it's been below 75%. I know this. I agree with you there. I'm just saying, I would think at the
his
end of the day,
can't be
because
happy this
is an entirely different.
His campaign can't be happy this morning because they got to bring in the conservatives who they told that they wanted to punch them in the nose, who they told that they wanted to have red stars, who they told they weren't real Republicans because they don't kiss the ass of the king of the tarp bailouts. And now they got to bring those people back in. And they're counting on people.
In today's political environment,
we know that they're going to do. They're counting on people to say, well, we got to vote for McConnell. And Ken, I know you want to weigh in on this. They're counting on people. I've already seen them on the social networks. They're already saying, well, if we don't vote for Kyle McConnell, that's a vote for Lindsey Graham.
Well, you're always going to have that. Well, before you get there, Ken, let me point this out, though, because if you're going to look at the numbers from 1932 and you're going to compare them to the numbers in 2014, to me that's really not a fair comparison, and I'll tell you why. In 1932, your voter turnout was extremely high because people were involved in the political process compared to what they are today. I appreciate that. But today is an entirely different environment when you look at that kind of stuff. 8 points from 75% to 67%. If I was running his campaign, yes, I would be happy with that. You had a 5-way primary, only though you had one legitimate contender, who was Matt Bevin. You still had a 5-way primary. Your establishment versus anti-establishment, because Tea Party is still very actively involved. The Tea Party has a big voice. All right, we have all of these dynamics in play that just haven't been in existence until recent years. I don't think that would concern me as a campaign manager for Mitch McConnell. That 8 points, that wouldn't bother me a bit. The fact that I won with 67%, to me, would be a big advantage. Go ahead, Ken.
Here's some interesting information that you may or may not know. I was given information that McConnell all along knew that he would get no lower than 60%.
Yep.
He actually called that back in February or January. I mean, at the beginning of the campaign is when I heard about this, and they knew he was not going to go below 60%, and they knew exactly where they are. I mean, make no mistake, Mitch McConnell is a very, very smart, political savvy person.
Yeah.
I mean, he's very smart when it comes to politics. When it comes to the lesser of two game, which is what Dale's talking about, I mean, that's what they're counting on, is that they're going to be able to rally around Obamacare. They're going to be able to rally around Obama. That they're already calling Grimes Obama's girl. They're doing all kinds of stuff in that regard, and they're going to tag her with the coal issue. It's going to be a rough race for Grimes. I mean, make no mistake, Mitch plays and he plays to win, and it doesn't matter how factual or unfactual it is. It's all a matter of how far can they get with distorting
Mitch is running
in order to before they get caught.
Well, Mitch is running the same campaign he's always running. Get down,
dirty,
suppress the vote, and the lesser of two evils, I'll be the lesser of two evils that wins. This isn't a new campaign strategy for him.
It's not new for the party. It's not new for the GOP because they're using the same campaign strategy that they've used in national elections for 20 years. If you go back in your time machine, go back in the DeLorean to 1994 when you had Newt Gingrich, whichever wife he was on, fourth, fifth, or sixth at the time, and Mitch was only on his third. But if you go back to that, what happened to Mitch's family? That's another thing I like to wonder and know as a sidebar. You never hear about his three daughters or his family. All you ever see is him, his Chinese wife, and Rand Paul's nephew-in-law. That's all you ever see in the bodyguards. That's a whole other sidebar. But if you go back to 1994, when Newt Gingrich was running, he was still on the third or fourth wife at the time. All we heard was, well, you better vote Republican in the national race because who do you want to be Speaker of the House? And all we heard during this primary was, well, don't you want McConnell to be majority leader?
Well, sure, of course. And that's normal. That's exactly. People were asking that kind of question because Mitch McConnell sold that if I win, I'm going to be majority leader. If I win, I'm going to be majority leader. So people made that synonymous. They planted
seed. You never thought you'd get under 60%. You know, the one name, the two words, one name that Mitch McConnell should be bowing down to today and thinking that he won with more than even 45%, you know the two words that kept him from getting below 45%?
What's that?
Rand Paul.
Rand freaking Paul. Thank you.
Oh, I don't disagree with you there. I don't disagree with you on that at all. You know, I think the early endorsement by Rand Paul, and I do think that Rand Paul has some reservations about it later, but the early endorsement...
Well, I sure hope that McConnell, if I was Rand Paul, I wouldn't trust McConnell. But, of course, you know, his nephew-in-law works for him now. We know about the whole Jesse Benton story. And,
sure.
And I got better friends of mine who have said worse things about Benton than I've said. But the bottom line is Rand Paul better hope he can trust McConnell now to help him become president, because that was the whole reason. That was the whole reason for him endorsing McConnell, other than the fact that nobody was in the race yet. So we know McConnell's not going to fight tooth and nail with Harry Reid. If he would fight Harry Reid with 1/100th of the power that he went after the Tea Party – if he would lie and cheat and steal against Harry Reid with 1/100th percentile of what he did against the Tea Party, we'd have a good majority leader. But he won't do that. So Rand Paul,
I think he keeps
part of the deal and helps Rand become president.
Well, I think ultimately, I mean, Rand Paul took a calculated risk to endorse Mitch McConnell early before anybody was in the race, before Matt Bevin was in the race, before anybody said this was a Tea Party candidate, because Rand, you know, Rand is a Tea Party candidate, a libertarian, and he respects the Tea Party. It depends on them.
I mean, in fairness to Rand,
well,
he probably thought
he would have done that.
Run and get more than 10%.
But, you know, it's like this. You know, once you're on a poker table, a Texas Hold'em poker table, and you go all in and put your money in the middle of the pot, you can't change your mind before the last card is up. And that's exactly the position Rand Paul was in. So he had to stick with his guns. I want to switch real quick because we're going to run out of time, air time, in just a few minutes. So I want to switch real quick. We've got to switch to Allison Lundgren and Grimes, and then I want to do a quick thing on the whole race. But Allison Lundgren and Grimes, 76% of the vote against three people that didn't even run a campaign. Burl Farnsley, the joke of the West, Greg Lichty, and Tom Recknewall. These three people literally didn't run a campaign, did no campaigning whatsoever. Nobody knew who they were, and yet they still were able to put together cumulatively 24% of the vote. How does that play out for Alice in London?
You've got another election in November of Tweedledee versus Tweedledum. You have David Williams versus good old Peepaw all over again. That's all you got to have. And somebody asked me last night on the social networks, how are we going to distinguish between the Turtle Trader and Allison Blundergrinds in November? How are you going to know the difference between them? And I said, I'll tell you how you know the difference. One will be wearing slacks, and one will be wearing skirt. One will say, uh-uh, and the other will say, uh-huh. And that's the way you'll know the difference.
Well, okay, we're talking about...
Am I wrong, Ken and Paul?
Dale, I don't know why you would say something like that. I mean, clearly there's a clear difference between myself and Miss Grimes. Yeah, sorry, I can't do that with a straight face anymore. Go ahead.
One allegedly has a penis, one allegedly has a vagina. That's the difference I know of.
Okay. Well, there is going to be one interesting twist, though, in November, because you're going to have Alice in Wonderland Grimes running as Democratic nominee now. You've got Mitch McConnell, as we knew, was going to be the Republican nominee. But there's a third person in this race, and it really makes the things a little bit interesting for me. Does this help or hurt Alice in Grimes? And that's Ed Marksberry. Ed Marksberry, as we know, was going to seek the Democratic nomination to run in the primary, and the Democratic Party shunned him. He is a well-known name who has helped Steve Beshear and many others across the Commonwealth get elected. He's a well-known name in the Democratic machine establishment, and he was shunned by the party and got angry, so he went independent. Now he's going to run as the third candidate in this race. Does he make a difference at all?
I can tell you right now, too.
I mean, he and another candidate, a fourth candidate, will make a difference, but I'll let Ken speak on that, since I know somewhere over off of Billtown Road, there's a Board of Elections representative listening into my comments and wanting to dish out some more red stars. So go ahead, Ken.
But we're going to have on the Libertarian side, we're going to have a candidate too. And I want to know if Marksberry's out getting the signatures. You know, that 5,000 signature requirement is not as easy as it sounds.
Right.
And I haven't seen or heard anything about that. I have no idea if he's doing that. I don't know if he's just planning on running as a write-in, because that's useless. And so I don't know what's happening there. I can tell you on the Libertarian side, David Patterson, we've had a lot of interest today. He is working towards being on the ballot. We're collecting signatures, doing the whole thing. And we're on track to finish by the end of July, which is where we were planning to be. Hoping to get included in Fancy Farm. We'll see if that happens. And, it's one of those things. There are going to be other people in this race, and, they are talking this is going to be a very expensive race. $100 million is the rumor, and I think that that's going to be the real story of this race, is how ugly and how annoyed is the public going to be with $100 million worth of ads.
It's going to be insane. It's really going to be insane. Ed Marksberry is going to be on the show, and we're going to talk to him in the very near future. I've actually spoken with Ed Marksberry a couple of times. He'd been wanting to come on the show, and I had asked him to wait until after the primaries. He was not in a primary, so there was no reason to get on air now. But I asked him to wait until after the primaries, and once the primaries were over, we would contact him, and we'd set up some airtime. So Ed Marksberry is going full speed ahead with the 5,000 signatures. I'm not sure if he has them yet or not. I'll have to reach out to him and find out. But he is going full speed ahead and planning on being on the ballot as an independent in November, not as a write-in, and we're certainly going to get the opportunity to talk to him in the very near future.
And we have our question before we lose time here. How many debates are we going to have between Tweedledee and Tweedledum for U.S. Senate? Do you know?
Well, actually, Mitch McConnell has already offered three. It's really funny, though. I want you to hear this. I was actually going to talk about this earlier, but in the interest of time, I'll let it go. But Mitch McConnell has already offered and challenged Alison Lundegan Grimes to three what they call Lincoln-Douglas-style debates. These Lincoln-Douglas-style debates are basically this. The conditions are that all three debates would be done and over before Labor Day, and that after Labor Day they could focus on their campaigns, I guess. And there would be no audience and no outside questions. There would be one moderator that would ask the questions, and there would be no audience and no outside questioners at all. It's a closed-door debate with no outside interference. So
I'll say this. I know we're running out of time, and I'll have plenty of time to wax poetic on sorry-ass neocons tomorrow night on the TNT show. But I think we could get some of the best ratings we had. You could have the most important, the most enlightening debate right here on the airwaves, if you could get a debate together with Ed Marksberry and David Patterson.
Oh, I think ultimately we're going to work towards that. I would love to get that. And, you know, like I said, we're going to get Ed Marshberry on. Once David Patterson gets his signatures and becomes an official candidate, then we'll put the two of them together. I've got no problem with that. I love doing those things on air. We've done on-air debates before, as you know. We've done it in a Metro Council district races here. District 19 was a great example with Kevin Rumpel and Jerry Miller. We have no problem with that. We love doing that. So, yeah, we'll definitely do that. That's not an issue at all. Guys, I want to thank you for the phone calls. We are down to about 5 minutes of live air. Ken, Paul, thank you so much for tuning in. Dale, final thoughts.
Well, I've done a lot of talking tonight, and I know you've done these debates before, so that's why I think if you have these two guys on, it may be the only time that Meemaw and Papaw hear anything really debated. Because the bottom line is when it comes to November, I would love for Mitch McConnell to prove us wrong, and all of a sudden he can start kissing up to the Tea Party, because remember, he claimed to be a patron of the Tea Party before he said that he should punch us in the nose. I guess he was almost like he was for the bailout before he was against it. He's got that Kerry S thing going. He vowed to crush the Tea Party everywhere and how the Tea Party was never going to do anything. But in blatant contradiction to the Constitution, he proposes solving none of these problems. He just takes the big money that the banksters hand him, and as you and Ken and Paul and I all know, these minor candidates don't ever get info time because they don't ever go on the airwaves because we are in an info war, and we know the globalists hand the bankster money to the Lundgren Grimes and the McConnells. The Lundgren Grimes and McConnells hand the money to the TV stations and the newspapers, and they also keep it going. They keep that cycle going. They're not doing anything constitutional. They're not doing anything to help the individuals. They don't care about sovereignty. They want to be part of the New World Order.
Well, I think there's a lot of sense to that. And, folks, I want to tell you a couple of things. We've got a quick show announcement to make because we are going to run out of time. The TNT Thursday Night True Show will be changing effective the week of June the 1st. On Tuesday, June the 3rd, will be the new air time and air date for Dale the Truth Gillespie. We're going to change the TNT show to the Tuesday Night Truth Show beginning Tuesday, June the 3rd. So make note of that if you can. We're still having all our shows all week. I'm just giving up Tuesday nights. Dale's going to take that night, and I'll take the third night for it in his place. We're just swapping a night out to make it a little bit easier for both of us. So that announcement had to be made. And folks, I tell you, you know, it really is disturbing that more people don't get involved in the process. I love the lively debates and the talk that we've had tonight. Thanks to Ken and Paul for calling in, because I appreciate that. You know, I tell you, there is so much comedy, if you will, and it really shouldn't be funny because it is a serious thing like an election. But there's so much comedy during elections when you're political pundits like we are. When you pay attention to news, when you pay attention to issues, when you get involved in the politics and you start looking at all these things together, it really has become more like a circus. And that is the sad reality that we live in. It's up to us to change the game. It's up to us to get rid of the comedy. It's time to start turning our politics from the comedy and the circus to the reality and the reality in the real world that we live in. It's time to change that. We can't change that when we continue going back and forth because we're favoring this person or that person based on party ideology. We have to start getting involved in the issues. We have to start getting involved in the discussion. And when you're ready to do that, that's what we're here for. We want you to do that. We beg you to do that. And we applaud those of you who do that. We may not always agree on everything. That's not our job. But without the discussion, we can't move forward. Thank you all for joining us tonight. Tomorrow night, Dale will be here for his second-to-last Thursday Night Truth Show, live at 7 o'clock. And please don't forget our good friend Ken Molman on Sunday nights at 7 o'clock with his own unique version of Liberty Unbridled. Have a great night, folks. We appreciate it. Thank you so much.